Good morning and welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. Let me introduce our panel to you, and then we'll tell you how you can become involved in the conversation, because we like that, too.
We do.
Roundtable at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, sir, to you.
And we welcome SUNY Albany professor, journalism professor, and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo back to the program.
Hello.
Good morning. How are you?
Good.
Excellent. And Libby Post is back.
Yay.
We haven't seen her since the fun drive and before the fun drive, so she's back from Florida, and it's very nice to have her back.
Thank you. It's nice to be back.
Welcome.
You're kidding. From Florida?
Yeah. I mean, I was stuck an extra day because of the weather here.
Oh horror.
Yeah, it was really horrible, but nonetheless, I managed.
You managed, yeah.
I did manage, and
rose to the occasion.
Yes, and we had a good time and saw some friends, but I am happy to be back.
Excellent. See you, Rosemary. You can join us roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also comment on our webpage. If you just go to our webpage, WAMC.org, you'll see that there is a post for today's panel, 2/11/15, and you can just click there and comment, and all will be well, and we can have a very interactive conversation that way. We welcome that as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org or WAMC.org/roundtable. Let us begin with the news. A lot of news, a lot of media news, a lot going on in the world. So we'll get to as much of this as we can possibly muster in the next hour. And we begin with the very sad story of Kayla Mueller, a young woman who we learned yesterday from her parents that they have been given proof from ISIS that she has died. There are apparently some photos or some apparently they gave proof of her
pictures of the body
right. Proof of her death, and sent three pictures of the family to the family. She was 26 years old, and it is just yet another one of these stories that is so tragic. And I don't know. Does it make? I mean, all these stories are tragic, but there's something about this one that is just really horrendous.
I'm sort of immune to this stuff, and this girl really got to me. She's 25 years old. She spent the last year, 26 when she died, but 25 is when she was really living her life.
Right.
And what an idealistic, wonderful. Yeah. She's the kind of daughter I would like to have. Yeah. She decided to do something about all the bad things she heard in the world, and she really tried. This is the last person in the world who should be dead early. I hate when these things happen. It's especially heinous that she had to go.
As far and we don't know a tremendous amount yet, do we, of apparently associated with a bomb blast.
Well, of course, ISIS said that she died in a Jordanian airstrike because they're trying to blame Arab retaliation on them for this horrible death. And the pictures show bruises on her face that are not inconsistent with that, but you don't know. It could have been some other way she died too. Mm-hmm. This group has a habit of killing people and then releasing their videos later.
I was going to say, let's remember who these people are.
That's
cut people's heads off. But you know, there's a great old folk song. It was all about the Battleship of Maine, which is how we got into the Spanish-American War. And looks to me like they're going to be feet on the ground again. The president is saying that. They're going to go along with it. People are going to go along with it. Looks like here we go again.
And, you know, ISIS is responsible for this death simply because they took her hostage.
Of course.
I mean, that's the bottom line here. And it is a shame. She seemed like somebody who did want to do things to change the world. And, you know, it's one less clear voice for change.
Yeah. It makes young kids that I deal with every day, I mean, what do you say to them about what can I do? And here was a young woman who really did try, and it just ended so sadly.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you, as an administration, Alan, as you say, I mean, the president has given some insight into this, but you know, how many more of these do you let go? At what point do you put the strategy together? Because this still gets back to the question of, okay, exactly what do we do and how do we do it so that we don't exacerbate the problem further?
Well, one thing that occurs to me, Joe, is that that nature abhors a vacuum. So if we don't go in, we just saw the Jordanians go in big time. I like that. I like the idea that nobody becomes dependent on America as the one who has to go into Afghanistan, for example. It bothers me a lot that the president clearly has to do something. He's being pressured into doing something, and he's going to do it. And we're going to put our troops back over there.
They're already delaying, I guess, withdrawal of troops from Iraq. That was in today's paper. That was reported. Oh. So you may be right. There may be something afoot.
How can you say you may be right? I don't want to fight with you, but how can you say they may be right when the president is going to Congress asking them for authority to put the kids back in there? I mean, it's pretty clear to me what's going to happen.
I guess what I mean by right is that that's a good move. That, yeah, I think the president is moving that way, but is that a good move to take and to fight against ISIS? Mm.
Well, what else are we to do?
Yeah, I mean, that's the big question.
That's the problem.
Right? I'm not arguing. I'm just saying, I mean, I guess that's the question on the table, but what else do you do?
What else are we to do? I mean, it's great that Jordan and some of the other Middle Eastern countries, the Arab countries, who feel the threat from ISIS because these folks would be overtaken and they would lose their power. They'd probably lose their heads, literally, by ISIS, recognize the threat ISIS is to the region as a whole. And so if their feet are on the ground, their boots are on the ground with some of our boots on the ground, not that I want to go and do another war, but what else are we to do? These people
We don't have any money. We don't have any money. And we also have some horrible trouble spots in Ukraine, in Nigeria. So I'm not sure that we should be sending. We don't have the money for it. We're not going to do it wholeheartedly.
Well, you know, there's a whole issue here of that it gets more and more interesting. Mm-hmm. There are things we don't want to do. You know, Al-Qaeda is one thing. ISIS is another thing. Mm-hmm. We are now reading a spate. Well, yes and no. I mean, we're reading a spate of stories about how the Saudis were supporting Al-Qaeda during this whole thing. But the Saudis are not supporting IS. Mm-hmm. So what you have is a difference now. So you see, remember the plane that everybody scoffed at? Mm-hmm. After 9/11, the only plane that was allowed to take off were the Saudis who were, you know, in the country. How much of that do we know? You know, how much of the Saudis supporting the other bad guys did we allow, as opposed to a general change in the power structure of the Mideast?
Yeah, that the whole involvement of the Middle East, of Saudi Arabia rather, in the turmoil there is under the microscope again. It's coming back out. And that's exactly what I'm talking about. Why Saudi Arabia has no interest in ISIS being there, so why aren't they fighting them? Why are we stepping back and fighting their battle for them?
I'll take it that's rhetorical, because
it is rhetorical, of course. Yeah. I mean, we caused it all. I have no doubt of that. We caused the turmoil that's going on right now in the Middle East.
So what's really bothering me is what we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So there's so many speculative ideas here. For example, the idea that Saudi Arabia floods the market with oil, gets at the Russians. Why did the Saudis, if we asked them to, why did they do it? I'm just setting up a scenario. Why did they do it? Well, maybe they owed one to the Americans. Maybe the Americans were getting ready to say, hey, Saudis, you know, this doesn't really wash what we've been catching you at or knowing. Possible. Anything's possible. It's the fact that we don't know that bothers me the most.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll get a few letters and we'll finish up in this conversation, and then we'll take a news break and move on to other issues of the day. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Alan, Libby, Rosemary, I'm Joe. We'll be back after a moment.
Support for WAMC comes from Elms College, Chicopee, Massachusetts. Working to educate students with their core values of faith, community, justice, and excellence, elms.edu. and Healthy Living Market and Cafe, a family-owned natural food market providing natural and organic foods, now open 7 days a week at the Wilton Mall, healthylivingmarket.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. Very nice to have you with us. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Alan, we have a letter or two.
We do. We heard from Philip. I just go in order that they arrive. With respect to yesterday's conversation about the Supreme Court, keep in mind that the only person who ever got a job that they didn't deserve because of affirmative action is Clarence Thomas, and that's from Phyllis Ortiz. And then Tom says, "Dear Roundtable, I don't mean to be a buzzkill." Anybody help me with that? What is a buzzkill?
It means like, oh, we're all so high on this sweet little girl, and maybe there was more to the story.
Okay, all right, good. Thank you, Rosemary. I don't mean to be a buzzkill, but please explain why you would put yourself into a situation like that without the possibility of getting yourself killed. Sorry.
Okay, well, that's actually an interesting situation because the reports show that Kayla was actually working in Turkey. She goes on a car ride into Syria over the border with a guy who's identified as maybe as her boyfriend, maybe a colleague, we don't know, to Doctors Without Borders, who are horrified to have this young American woman in Syria. It's pretty dangerous. So they send her back. You have to go back. They send them both back. That is when they were kidnapped. The guy was let free, and we've not heard from him. What's going on? She was captured at that point. So, there is that I could have some of that. Oh, she was a naive little jerk. She went into a situation that's really dangerous without knowing what she was getting into. But I don't know. I don't think. I think she was talked into it, advised it was possible, and that it was safe, that it was containable, and that something happened. I would like to know more about it.
Yeah, and I did read something in one of the news reports about some of her activities in terms of the Palestinians and the Israelis, and I wasn't exactly sure what that was all about also. So I think, look, soldiers put themselves in danger all the time. They go into knowing what the possibilities are. My own son, years and years ago, when they were kidnapping an American every 2 minutes in Colombia, I said to him, "No, you can't go." And he said, "Dad, I think I've told you this. It's all about me."
And I'm going.
"It's all about me." I said, "Well, let me ask you this." He actually signed a contract. "Let me ask you this. If you get kidnapped and they ask us and they send us your ear and they ask us for everything we have, and I mean everything, both our pensions and the house and whatever else we have, would you expect that we would get you out of there?" He said, "Absolutely." I said, "It's all about me."
That's funny.
We got a couple more letters regarding military action.
Thank you for that. And Michael says, "Why was that man she was traveling with released the next day? Was he in on it?" We'll never know.
Good question, Michael. Yeah.
James, someone stated, "We have no money for boots on the ground." That just means more debt and cutting, moving funding from social programs and other funding in the States. I don't think boots would fix anything, even if we do clear ISIS out. Another group, probably a more extreme group. Well, I find that hard to believe there's anybody
sure
more extreme.
Much more extreme.
We'll fill the void. We should be educating this area and help build a community to fix the deep social problems, says James. And Jim says, "No U.S. troops on the ground except for a few planes, Turkey, Egypt, Saudi Arabia. Combined, 1.5 million troops are sitting it out."
There you go, Jim. That's
my
point. That's true.
You know, I think you wait long enough and their ox gets gored. And Jeremy says, "I agree, Alan. It bothers me the most that we can't. It bothers me the most that we can't trust what we think we know." I swear I just read what is there.
I know.
If governments are consistent at one thing, it's misinforming the public. And that, wait a second, did Judy send us something? And I don't know, Capital District citizens say Elizabeth Warren is to run in 2016.
That's nice. Not going to happen.
Was that wasn't to, was that a press release or to us?
Well, no, I don't know what it was, but all I know is that Judy sent it to us.
Oh.
And I trust and love Judy, so.
Okay, there you go.
Oh, hey, now here's a headline. Capital District citizens to rally in support right. of effort to encourage Elizabeth Warren for president. As Libby says, that's nice. Ain't going to happen.
Yeah, ain't going to happen.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we will talk about things that are happening, will be happening. Could happen, won't happen. We welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. Also, go to WAMC.org/roundtable, and you can comment there as well. 211-15 panel is the post. Click on it, and you can be part of our interactive conversation. We welcome you to join that as well. Or, again, directly, roundtable at WAMC.org. Alan, Rosemary, Libby, we'll all be back right after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. And we have, I believe, a letter or two. Do we not, Alan? Am I right on that?
I am sure. If you say so.
Well, now I'm then, not sure we do.
Then you're right. Ahead. Well, what we know, Pineapple Bin Laden's plane left Bangor, Maine, as they were. At what? Kenny Bunkport. Look, I'm reading it correctly.
I know, but I don't think it makes sense.
Gibberish.
With the businesses, and those towers did not come found, F-O-W-N, from planes.
Okay. Come down.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, and then it says below there, head in the clouds.
Okay.
That's what it says.
And
all right.
He believes that
hands not on the keyboard.
A grassy knoll.
Hands not on the keyboard. Nice.
And John says, don't kid yourselves around the table. There's always a more extremist waiting in the wings. That's what he said. Okay. That is what I have. There's not even telling me what lunches at
what
the Copay
soup
Generally.
Is. Right. Okay. So let us move on to a couple of other stories. I will admit there are two media stories I want to talk about. I will admit that one of these surprised me, and one of these left me bereft.
I wonder which ones.
I know. I'm really upset about Brian Williams. I have to say, I was, I don't think I was impacted emotionally as I was on this Jon Stewart story since Carson retired. Because you just have that sense that no one will ever replace him to do what he did the way he did it.
Which is right. That you are correct, sir.
Right. And nobody has ever...
Williams wanted to do.
Right. I mean, there are a lot of talented people who have come and have done late-night shows, David Letterman being among them.
Sure.
But it's a different show. It's a different person. It's a different perspective. I believe, and weirdly, Rosemary and I were talking about this...
Just yesterday.
I mean, we were just having this conversation of, you know, how much longer could he do this? Because it has to wear on you, and yet we also said that, like, we as a nation need a person like this. So now what do we do without one? Jon Stewart announced yesterday that he would be leaving his show after 17 years at some point at the end of this year.
And there was that wonderful poll, remember that, a while back that said that young people said they
get most of their news.
Yeah.
Right.
Or all their news.
Well, also, and young people being up to, I believe, 58.
Yeah. Well, those are, when you're at my age, those are young.
Yes.
This is monumental. We keep talking, we old folks keep talking about, oh, Walter Cronkite, there'll never be a Walter Cronkite. Jon Stewart is Walter Cronkite. Mm-hmm. He was trusted. He was believed. He was turned into by people who supposedly are not interested in the news. He changed the news. He is amazing, and he used many of the same techniques that we used to use in journalism before we got so, I don't know, whatever we are now, a mess. He would compare what people said now to what they said in the past. He would hold up tomfoolery. He would call people out. He interviewed like a maniac. He was, despite what he calls himself, a fabulous journalist.
Yeah, no,
and I'm going to miss him.
No, it's terrible. I'm feeling the same thing that Joe felt, real. I'm feeling really badly that he's gone.
I wonder, you know, and you hope that, you know, he'll take on some other gig and do something.
Do
else,
more movies
and
or
do something,
something
meaningful and whatever that may be. And I'm sure he will because he has great talent and I don't see any reason. I certainly understand it, as we were talking about yesterday, Rosemary. I mean, to do that every single solitary day.
It's a lot.
I mean, and to pull it off.
Mm-hmm. We were looking at a piece, Joe and I were looking at the piece he did just on Brian Williams,
oddly enough.
It's him at his best. Yeah. It's awesome writing, tremendous research, a bold editorial statement. It's just great. And he turned out that stuff every single day for more than 15 years.
But it's not just him.
The whole team, right?
When they win an Emmy, you have this whole group of people coming up.
Absolutely.
But he epitomized and he was the face of the show.
I've interviewed many, many Daily Show writers, both former and present, and they all say the same thing, which is that you are allowed to work, you go to work, you work in a very collaborative, fun environment. But he is so hands-on, and if it gets on the air, he is the one who has outlined it, scripted it, and put it together.
Right.
And there are a lot of other – yes, it's a very collaborative effort. There are a lot of other people working on it, especially when it comes to the news clips and things like that. But when it comes to the writing and the delivery, that's him.
And, you know, it's so interesting that when you watch and he has somebody – is D-RK allowed on the radio?
Yeah.
Okay. So, and you know they're dorks, right?
Oh.
So they come on. Yeah. So they come on the radio, on the television, and they're with him, and you know they're no goodnicks, and he's fun, but when they walk off, you know they've been done in.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They knew it too.
Right. He did it with
the media. He did media criticism. And he spun off a lot of fantastic talent, too. Steve Colbert started there. John Oliver, who's on CNN now, fabulous.
Do you think Colbert is now regarded as more important than he is?
More important than Stewart?
Yeah.
No.
I just wonder if there's a relationship between Steve Colbert leaving his show on Comedy Central and going
to late night.
And
getting a hell of a job,
And getting a great job, and John leaving and deciding that there's another chapter yet to be written in his life.
After 15 years in any job, you're going to be looking. And he just did Rosewater in the past year.
Right.
He's written books.
He wants another chapter in his life.
Yeah.
He also said he wants to eat dinner with his family.
Right. Well, there is that.
he said last night that, and I hear from people, they're very nice.
Well, he's got little kids.
He does. And the other thing I think about this story is that's interesting is that, you know, you think of who could possibly replace him, because I assume that the Daily Show franchise had two hosts prior to Jon Stewart.
Right.
I assume they will have another host. And it would seem to me the guy that would have the best chance at this or the best would be the best fit would be John Oliver to go back to that program.
I thought that too.
Now whether he wants to do that every day and to be in that position, because he's got a pretty nice gig weekly.
He does.
But it doesn't have the visibility that the Daily Show has.
And Ted Hahn, by the way, wrote us and said exactly what you just said. Let's hope John Oliver takes over after a second season on HBO. And that's from Ted.
You know what's interesting about how newsworthy this was? I got a New York Times news alert.
Yeah, me too.
About this.
Absolutely, NPR news.
Right after the Brian Williams one came in.
NPR alert as well last night. It's a huge story, and it was. I think they timed it to the point where the news broke. They had a release ready, but the news broke as he was taping the show, and it was the last thing on the program. When the audiences left, they told the media, and that's when they sent out the release.
I'm sure people were tweeting
Absolutely.
And maybe Brian Williams will take over his job.
You know, he wanted to take over the Tonight Show.
And I think in 6 months he's going to be looking for a job.
Okay, so let's morph into that story if we can. Brian Williams, who we've been talking about for several days now, Brian Williams on Saturday took himself out of the anchor chair and said, I'm going to go on a hiatus. I'm going to take personal leave while there is an investigation. I am too much in the news to be actively
a reporter
and an executive editor of the of the nightly news. So Lester Holt came in, and then yesterday, just days after that announcement, we learn that NBC has finished their investigation. They felt that it was not at all appropriate what he did, and they have saddled him with an unpaid suspension for 6 months.
He got called up to the boss's apartment on Central Park West, I believe. And it was just the two of them, and told it's going to cost them, what, $5 million fine, and maybe that's what he would have earned in that time.
That's what he would have earned in 6 months.
And that he was out. Listen, NBC, you know, really was in a bad spot here, because if they didn't, it wasn't good enough to let him take himself out. They had to show, I'm sure Rosemary will agree with this, they had to show, as the news organization, that we can tolerate this kind of stuff.
They do, and I don't think this is the end of it. A suspension without pay is typically a first step. I think this is a brilliant move because, as you say, it allows them to say, see, we don't like it either. We took a step. They can test out Lester Holt in 6 months and see how he's doing, see how their ratings are going. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And at the end of 6 months, what are we in, August? We're in the middle of summer. Mm-hmm. It's a slow time of year. You got to make a change. That's the time to do it. Right. You're not going to disrupt everything.
Oh, he ain't coming back.
I don't think so either.
No, but as Jon Stewart aptly said in his segment, Brian Williams is the only one to lose his job for lying about Iraq. You know, and I mean, I get it. I get it. I get it. What he did was stupid. It was a breach of journalistic ethics. But I can tell you there were plenty of people who were like, are you kidding? He's losing his job over this.
Apples and oranges. The government lies to you and starts a war. He should have been impeached. He was not. That doesn't mean, that doesn't give the right to a news anchor to tell a lie. It's just, I know Jon Stewart did it in his bit about Brian Williams, but it's just a really bad analogy.
And I love, the fact that the New York Times has been so adamant.
Aren't they? Yes. Oh, he's the victim of false memory today, they say, about Brian.
Well, you wonder about early Alzheimer's. You certainly do.
Well,
I mean, look, you know, he made a mistake. You know, and who of us hasn't made a mistake? He made a big mistake on the nightly news. And so, yeah, he's going to probably lose his job because of it. And
I think it was more than a mistake.
Gosh.
I mean, I don't know.
He's self-aggrandizing, which all of them do.
Okay, it doesn't matter.
You show me another anchor. When you say all of them do, you show me another anchor who you catch in that kind of lie, they're going to be gone.
Well, no,
He told the story accurately in 2003.
Right.
And then we have it on tape.
Right.
And then you see the video evidence of the story starting to grow and grow and grow and grow and grow. And if you're doing that at a cocktail party, fine. But if you are going in front of the news cameras as he did in 2006 and reported that story, 2009, I apologize, 2009, and reported that story as fact, well, that's different. That's when you make your mistake,
then
as far as I'm concerned.
The question is whether he did this deliberately. The question is whether he did this deliberately and said, oh, I didn't get caught when they told us, so now I'll just keep that
going.
Little story. Mm-hmm. Or did he just, like, remember it wrong, which we all do? But my point is,
remember
he's the
that
anchor.
Wrong?
He makes millions of dollars. It does not matter whether he remembered it wrong or it was deliberate lie. It was incorrect information.
Well, and it still brings to – I'm sorry, Alan, but it still brings to question the many people who reported this to NBC, saying that it was not true. And as late as January, in mid-January, he again reported it on the nightly news. Yes, he is the managing editor, but there are a lot of other people who are part of that program who I assume knew and did not intervene on the copy that was read over the nightly news.
Yeah, he could have just not said the story and just talked about the guy, because it was all about the guy at the basketball game.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, we have a couple of letters, Joe. Do you want?
Yes. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Our friend Julius, who we love, really, he's a regular correspondent. So is Jeff Klein leading the move to abandon ship? That's from Jules. Now, for those of you who have no idea what this is all about, let me just say that Jeff Klein, who is the leader of the group that
took the gang of four or five
that left the Democrats, I think for bad reasons, but who knows, and now is saying he's giving up his law practice because the ethics reform that is being proposed is that everybody should tell exactly what they're making. Well, you can all have as much sympathy for Jeff Klein as you want, but not me. Well, no, I mean, you know, look, first of all...
He can afford to give up his law practice.
Well, first of all, I think a lot of people are in Albany. Their knees are knocking. Their teeth are chattering. They know that, and every time he gets a chance, Preparara says there's a lot more coming. So when somebody bails out like that, you got to ask. You know, you got to raise your shoulders a little bit and say, I wonder why, what the real story is.
It's the tip
of
the iceberg.
Yeah.
Does everybody know what we're talking about?
No. No, because there's a chance now that Shelley Silver has been ousted. And Preet Bharara, the U.S. attorney, thank you for that, Rosemary. Preet Bharara, the U.S. attorney, says more people are going to get indicted, basically. And so there's a whole reform movement on so that there will be no more outside income. Now, of course, there is going to be outside income. They're not going to give that up. One guy in the paper in the Daily News today is saying, this is great. People who are clients are entitled to a certain amount of privilege, a certain amount of confidentiality, said Senator John Flanagan, R. Suffolk County, a lawyer, one of the 16 lawmakers named by the Daily News as earning more than $100,000 in outside income in 2013. And he's the head of the powerful Senate Education Committee.
Right.
So who knows why you go to hire a lawyer, what you think you're going to get on the outside because you've hired him. He opposes banning outside income because it would discourage people. My finger's down my throat now because it would discourage people from serving in the legislature.
No, what it would do, it would equalize the playing field a little bit, and you'd have people who don't have outside incomes and want to serve and want to be part of the process and aren't looking necessarily to get rich from the process running for office. It would take it out of the coming oligarch perspective that we've got going on here and back to the people.
On the money,
Mr. Smith.
On the money.
We'll be able to go back to Congress.
And you say to people, and they say, well, we can't live on that money in Manhattan. We can't live on that money in Manhattan. Well, maybe you can't, but... Hello,
everybody who wants to make $100,000 and go to the legislature, raise your hands.
That's right. That's right. You know, this doesn't preclude your spouse from making money. It doesn't, you know, I mean, you know, your spouse could be making the million-dollar law firm stuff. I mean, you know, folks.
And by the way, that's exactly right, and people will do that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's always an opportunity for ripping off the system.
But,
so now it'll be the spouses. You got to give the money to the spouse, and that way you get a little influence with the husband.
This is also a reason why we need public campaign financing, because only the people who can afford it and who have friends who can afford to give big money can run for office.
Yeah, and the problem, of course, is that, you know, that even when you have good people running, they almost always say, no, the public campaign finance money isn't enough, Bloomberg and others.
Yeah, right.
We're going to spend anything we want.
Right, right. And so it's got to be, but we need to totally change the election law. And as I've said over and over, and maybe now it will change, election law never changes because it protects the incumbent. But you know, maybe now with everything that's going on and Preet doing what he's doing and everybody looking over their shoulders, maybe we now can have some real reform.
Yeah, if this is a golden opportunity.
Yeah.
Let's take a break. We have a few minutes left. We'll take a break and come back and talk about a few more subjects before we go. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Elements Hot Tub Spa, downtown Amherst, Massachusetts. Offering hot tubs in 5 indoor or outdoor private rooms, plus a team of massage therapists for individuals and couples. ElementsHotTubSpa.com for gift certificates and photo gallery. And Spirit House, Amherst, Massachusetts. A family-owned wine, beer, and spirits retailer offering organically farmed wines from around the world. Wine tastings Saturday afternoons. SpiritHAUS.com.
Well, Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We welcome your comments, and we have several to share with you right now.
We do. J. Michael writes, Williams is a journalist, not Garrison Keillor. I don't expect the truth from politician, police, and many others, but I do expect it from journalists. I depend on what they say to be true. Journalism is supposed to be the first draft of history. As for his fate in the future, I honestly don't care. I believe in rehabilitation, so I could accept his return. But I think the best for all is that he retires and writes books and novels. That's what J. Michael says. And then Mark says, good morning, panel. Lester Holt will be a fabulous replacement for Brian Williams, not because he's African-American, but because he's an excellent journalist. Rosemary wants to see a woman. Barbara Walters has already broken that glass ceiling.
Did Rosemary say she wanted a woman? I said it yesterday,
and I still want it.
And one person having broken the glass.
Yeah, okay, yeah, so yeah, she,
and
Barbara
Katie Couric.
Walters.
Don't forget Katie Couric.
Well, and Connie Chung and Elizabeth Vargas and Diane.
Do you know we're half the population, yeah. Mark? Half.
Right. 53% right. of it, anyway.
Right.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And then Sean says, John Stewart for president in 2016.
Yeah, I can do that.
And like that. And then Leslie says, the evening news is pure entertainment. These anchors are mostly lightweight. Less. And Eric says, no, not just the Iraq story, Katrina. More.
Oh, other lies.
Yeah,
there
were other,
that
yeah.
And, well, you know, there's a really interesting story done by the Poynter Institute, which is like a journalism mm-hmm. think tank, and it went through the supposed lie on Katrina that Brian Williams said, mm-hmm. that he, in his quarter, in the French Quarter, his hotel in the French Quarter, he saw a body floating by.
At the Ritz-Carlton, yes. Mm-hmm.
However, they went back, and, you know, it's quite possible. They had pictures from the time, there was water in the street, and the hotel isn't exactly in the French Quarter. Mm-hmm. It's right on the edge. Mm-hmm. It may not be a lie.
And it could have very well been a very old body because, you know, they bury people there and they just go right out to sea.
One of the things they took a look at were where bodies were found in the city that day, and they were in the area.
Yeah. And also...
So it's a wonderful piece of reporting because everyone jumped out, oh, he's a liar, that's a lie right. too. And Poynter went and looked at this and said, no, maybe not. Right. It's credible.
Well, and also there was the story about, because he never reported that. He told it, anecdotally. Right. As a talk show, but not reporting right. it, which, again, to me anyway, big difference.
Anyway, Robert says, Libby.
Yes.
Stolen value is not a present. Quote mistake. It's an immoral act, if not a crime.
Stolen value.
Stolen value? Okay.
Huh? Okay. And then I guess that's it. Oh, wait a second. I, too, like Joe, this is from James, was taken aback learning John Stewart was leaving the show. However, I think we still have John Oliver, who is doing a yeoman's job at HBO.
Yeah, we said that.
And we said that. And and Peter says, had to leave, Stewart had to leave because of his position regarding Palestine. Anybody know about that?
Oh, interesting. Very interesting. Well, he's been marginally pro-Palestinian, questioning Israel and its foreign policy, and he got blasted by the Jewish.
I don't believe that.
Yeah,
why
well,
he had to leave.
I don't know if you know. I don't know. I doubt it.
Why would you fight a star? Yeah. I mean, you do it when right. when the mud hits
right.
the fan.
Well, yeah, but I don't think that's enough for him.
Yeah,
I mean, he had this great piece about you know people yelling at him. You know, you saw people like popping up from behind his desk, yelling at him when he was talking about Israel and Palestine. And, you know, it's a very difficult situation, and he's Jewish, and it's a hard, mm-hmm. you know, thing to balance in any situation. And he was raising some valid points. Not everybody agrees with it, but he was raising some valid points. But when people talk about Israel and Palestine and in the Jewish community, and I'm probably going to get in trouble for this, people get really hot. And regardless of what somebody says. And so there was a lot of pushback.
There's a lot of absolutism.
Yes, yes.
On this thing. Yeah. And we hear about it.
Right.
Right.
I think he thrived on that sort of pushback.
You know,
I agree.
I don't think this had anything to do with him leaving. I think that speaks to the Jews control the media.
Yeah,
that's what that speaks
that's
to.
The,
And it also it also speaks to the letter writer. I don't know what his horse in the race was.
All right, so final topic, and we talked about this yesterday about the Alabama and same-sex marriage, and a day after a federal ruling legalizing same-sex marriage took effect in Alabama, a federal judge set a hearing that could determine whether resistant, thank you very much, local probate judges must grant licenses to gay couples.
Yeah, they do. You know, it's the federal law. The federal courts made this decision. Roy Moore thinks he's God, and we know that because he erected a statue to himself.
That's the judge who said you don't have to marry people.
Right, in the form of the Ten Commandments inside the courthouse.
Alabama's chief justice.
Yeah, his chief justice who lost his job and then got reelected. You know, the fact of the matter is that this is a federal decision. They do have to pay attention. More and more of these surrogate judges, which, by the way, they don't have to be lawyers to be surrogate judges in Alabama, which I find a little strange, are doing it. They're giving out the licenses. And people just need to recognize we're now at close to 39 states. When the Supreme Court decides this in the summer, it's going to be nationwide, and it's a done deal, and get over it.
Okay, let's start. Let's stay with Alabama for a moment, and let's stay with some of the judges who will not marry people and who face all kinds of pushback as a result of this. They could be fined. They could
go to jail.
They could go to jail.
Go to jail.
Yeah. So my question to you, Libby, would be, what do you think the politics of the situation are? In other words, you got a judge. They're living in a racist part. Partially racist environment.
They're acting more on their religious beliefs than they are on the law. That's what's going on. And you know, Roy Moore is the first one to do that. And this is all about their perception of what Jesus thinks about same-sex couples. And Jesus never talked about same-sex couples anywhere in the Bible. And, you know, the fact of the matter is this is a federal case. The federal judge says this is absurd. Every other almost all the federal appeals courts have said this is discrimination. The Supreme Court threw out most of DOMA. Let's get over this. You know, the fact of the matter is there was an op-ed piece in the paper today by two women who were not political. One of them has Huntington's disease. So now all the issues of being able to go to the hospital, all those kinds of issues, if they get married, won't be an issue. If they can't get married, it will be.
We'll leave it there. Thank you, everyone. Alan, Rosemary, and Libby, we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll get all civil war on you after this.